I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, you know how much I love alcohol.
Yes.
I can barely say the name of the word. Alcohol. Well, remember when you spoke with Wendy Killeen?
Yes.
From Stan Killeen.
Yes, that's correct.
The winery, because you love wine.
Yes.
I'm going to be talking with Tim Martin from the Tumut Brewing Company.
Oh, okay. That sounds interesting.
Absolutely fabulous. And I'm going to have a beer with Tim.
Yes.
And then straight after that. Well, I think we're going to play that as his song.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have a beer with Tim, but I think we're going to say we're going to have a beer with Duncan.
I'm
pretty
okay.
sure that's the song we're
right,
going to play.
Okay.
And then straight after that,
we're going to Deniliquin, and yep. you're going to be chatting to Steve at the Car Hotel, Motel and Caravan Park.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely fabulous place. And then straight after that, we are going to be going to Sheer Outback.
Yes, in Hay.
Yes.
Yes, lovely little town, that one.
And I'll be chatting with Tegan.
Yes.
And also Jack.
A shearer.
He's the resident shearer there, listeners, and he's going to show you how to shear a sheep. And then straight after that.
That's a bit of hard work.
That's very hard work. I've got to tell you, it's darn hard work.
Mm.
And then straight after that, we're going to be going to Broken Hill.
Yes, to your most favourite movie place where it was filmed, or some of it was filmed.
The Palace Hotel, and you're going to be chatting with Esther.
Esther, yes.
Yeah. Listeners, the Palace Hotel, if you've ever go to Broken Hill, you've got to go to the Palace Hotel.
Yes, it's interesting.
It's interesting. It's iconic. One of Australia's most famous movies, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I don't know how many times I've watched it.
Well, we watched it at, out in the middle of nowhere, didn't we? On a Lilo. Where was that? That was the big bash.
That was a big red bash. Yes,
we did.
About 5 years ago.
Under the stars at the big red bash, eating KFC. My most favourite movie. So, listeners, we've got a fabulous program coming your way, as well as a great selection of
music,
as requested by
the people we interview.
That's it, listeners. So, what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Oh, well, welcome back, listeners. This is Phil C, and I'm still Roman Oz. And today I'm with Tim Martin, Managing Director of Tumut River Brewing Company. How are you today, Tim?
I'm good, thanks, mate. I'm excited to be here.
So am I.
If anything we forgot to do is get a couple of beers.
Exactly. But I'll tell you what, we're going to try a few of your brews afterwards, okay? Sometimes I have to sing for my supper, and today I'm going to have to sing for a beer.
I just feel odd having a conversation with anybody without a beer in my hand these days. I've gotten so used to that being the process. If you see me doing this, a little bit, though, you know that I think I'm hanging on to a beer. It'll make me feel more comfortable.
Fantastic. Righto, Tim, now tell us a bit about your brewing company. How long have you been doing it, and why did you do it? How did it all start up?
Yeah, so that's obviously this interview is not going to be the kind of interview we can go through the whole story.
No.
So basically, the short version is I saw a need for commercial tourism in Tumut.
Yes.
So the interest in beer was actually an interest in developing commercial tourism for the region and trying to do something that could sustain itself. The biggest, in my opinion, everything is my opinion in this, so you'll have to bear with me on that.
Uh-huh.
But in my opinion, one of the biggest issues that we had with commercial tourism efforts in the past have been that none of them were big enough to sustain themselves. So they'd do something lovely, but we didn't have the trade and they couldn't generate the trade, so they inevitably failed because they didn't have enough traffic. I was looking to do something large enough to be able to sustain itself and hopefully allow other smaller ventures to sort of feed off it in the hopes of turning around Tumut's tourism.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of idea you come up with when you're 27, because you think you can change the world and everything's going to be, you can do anything you want.
Yes.
As a 40-plus-year-old now, it's been a long, hard road, and I often want to kick the 27-year-old version of Tim.
Okay.
We're pushing through it. So that's kind of where the original inspiration came about. And then I came across the idea of a craft brewery.
Right.
So originally I had sort of no intention of to what it was going to be. I just knew I wanted to do something like that.
Yes.
And a craft brewery ticked all the boxes because it was something that was manufactured locally. It was craft and artisanal. It had the live music aspect. It had the hospitality component. So for me, it would build a great venue to allow us to provide all of those things. The thing I hadn't anticipated was falling in love with brewing.
Right.
So that's part of the process.
Right.
I had to learn how to brew beer, and I became absolutely obsessed with brewing beer.
Yes.
So when the original concept all fell in a heap and we had to walk away from it. I was then an addicted home brewer that then came full circle and opened a brewery anyway.
Right.
So it's sort of so I've managed to meet my first and second level goals within the one project, because they changed so dramatically between when I started and when I got here.
Right.
So that was, yeah, like I said, it's been a long time to get to this point. And we started, it was about 8 years ago now, we started building the original brewery.
Right.
The original brewery was a 150-litre brew house, so we were the smallest commercial microbrewery in the Southern Hemisphere.
Right.
And that cost about $60,000 to get open, to basically produce beer legally.
Yes.
And that was just basically effectively savings and desperate pleas for money from my wife and my parents and so on and so forth.
But you do have a partner, don't you? Because the story is like two mates, one beer. So.
Yeah, so we did. We wanted. I did have a partner. Mm-hmm. He had a family and decided that this working 80 hours to 100 hours a week and being away every weekend and not being home of an evening and not getting paid was not the ideal situation for a young marriage and a baby.
Yes.
So he made the decision to spend more time at home. So he's now got he's still got a small share in the brewery, just in case Tui's comes and buys us one day for $150 million.
Okay.
And he'll get paid for all the years' effort he put in before he left.
Right.
But other than that, it's basically just me now. So yeah, he was here in the beginning and he helped me definitely with the construction and providing an extra bit of motivation when things were tough.
Right.
So yes, I know it was good.
So yeah, we were talking earlier and you said you've got to go, like tomorrow morning at 4:30 a.m. you've got to go to Canberra and start doing deliveries.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you
yeah.
really are doing 80 hours a week, 100 hours.
Yeah, well,
keep going.
Yeah, I guess an average day for me. So in the theory for me is that I work Monday to Friday,
right?
Because I'm in management, let's call it, in the business.
Uh-huh.
So I am the brewer as well. So the theory is I work from 6 a.m. Monday to Friday till between 6 and 10 p.m. depending on just what's going on here, like because if there's an event I have to be here for it or whatever, or if the brew goes bad, then I'm often here later to try and make sure it comes out okay at the end.
Right.
And then the catch is that I do the tours because I'm the person who knows the story.
Right.
I do the festivals and I do the farmers markets because I'm free.
Yes.
And those things don't often make money.
Mm-hmm.
So often weekends I'm away as well. So
okay.
That's the challenge. So we try to. I try to only travel 8 to 10 months of the year,
mm-hmm.
so that I then have at least sort of ideally one weekend off a month if I can, where I'm at home. And so that's kind of my fantasy, and that's what I try to stick to. Well,
okay.
Actually, the fantasy is every weekend. The reality is probably about one out of every month.
Okay.
Yeah, and then obviously there's one day a week I travel. So that one day a week I get up at about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then I hit the road. And if I'm lucky, I'm home before midnight. And that's I do about 1,200 kilometres on that trip.
Wow.
And just go and do all the deliveries.
1,200 kilometres in one day?
Yeah.
Doing all your deliveries?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, again, you're not allowed to ask the staff to do that.
No.
But as a business owner, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
Of course.
So the practicality aspect of it is I can't afford to be on the road more than one day.
Yes.
And nobody can do that run unless they're the owner,
yes,
because of the sheer amount of hours you have to do.
Of course.
So we either send somebody away for two, or I just take one and get it done. So
yeah.
I'm pretty grumpy on Thursdays. Thursdays is not a good day to come and visit me.
Fair enough.
Wednesdays is usually the better day. Wednesdays is my hard day.
So yeah. where do you deliver to? Other than Canberra, you 1,200 kilometres. Your beer must be sort of everywhere now.
Oh, look, it's getting that way. It's funny because 1,200 kilometres isn't as far as you think by the time you do a whole loop.
Right.
On that day is Canberra, South Coast and ski fields.
Okay.
So I will go through Canberra, down the South Coast and then up back through the ski fields,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll get home. So I've got to time my venues right because the last venue I visit is about 10 o'clock.
Right.
So I've got to try and... So the first venues I visit are always Woolworths and distributors and stuff. We've got warehouses that are open early. So
mm-hmm.
when I get to Canberra, they're already open. I drop off my stock to those guys. Then I work my way through the ones through the middle of the day and then I end up at the end with restaurants and bars that are open till late, and that way I can sort of meet each area as I go through at the right time.
Right.
And that's had a bit of a challenge last week. I decided to shake my route up and went the other way, and I ended up having to stay in Canberra because by the time I got there, I'd missed half the venues. You know what I mean? The idea was to avoid come the 2-hour drive down to Hume rather than coming the 2-hour drive through the Kangaroos and Brumbies.
Mm-hmm.
And the catch was that I miscalculated my venues. So the venues that I ended up at were closed, so I had to wait till the next day.
So now what about your beers? How many do you actually make? How many different brews have you got?
So we make 12 at any one time.
Okay.
So the idea, we have six, which is actually now seven, mm-hmm. and it's almost becoming eight, which is a problem because we keep getting carried away. But we have a minimum of six staples at the minute.
Right.
And like I said, there's two extras there that seem to keep making their way in, even though they're not technically staples.
Right.
And then we brew our seasonals on top of that. So the idea is that out of our 24 taps, we always try to have 12 of our own.
Yep.
And then we have another 12 that are other local ciders, local independent breweries. You know, basically anything that ticks those boxes gets the opportunity to be on our wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of how we try to keep it. It's been 7 years of trade, 8 years since we started building the brewery. Right. And so I've made hundreds of different beers now.
Okay.
It's gotten to the point now where it's getting a bit insane. But it's good fun. Like that's the, you know, making the Hitchhikers every day, making the Ginger Ninja every day, that's work.
Yes.
But like making, we just made one called Just Beer.
Yes.
And it's literally for the bloke who comes up and goes, I just want a beer.
Okay.
You know, just give me a beer. And we go, well, this is just beer.
Okay.
And so that was basically a Kolsch style that I hadn't made a Kolsch before, which is, you know, quite a common beer. I just never made one. So
right.
I made one this time. So that's fun because it's a new recipe and it's something different. And I get to experiment a little bit. We just brought off a Blood Orange Sour. That's another one which we've done a couple of times before with Dalgetty. They're one of our friends in the brewing world,
mm-hmm.
and they often work with us with some different beers, so we do a few different collaborations with them.
Yes.
And so they came down this time and we made that one again. That was great fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's always something new.
Tours. Oh yeah, now tell us about your tours.
Yeah. So we do the tours. The tours are booked on the website.
Right.
And so we just are, like, they're basically, there's different price structures, which I don't even remember what they are. But the basic crux is there is a very basic tour that we do for groups, which is just the actual tour itself.
Yep.
And then for individuals, we do different levels of the tour, one with just tasters, one with tasters and a meal. But the tour itself is always the same. And in that process, you generally get me, unless I'm just not able to be here because of other events like we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
But I'll then take you through the history of the brewery, like how we started and the trials and tribulations we went through to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go through the brewing process itself.
Okay.
And how we make it and what ingredients we use. And a lot of, I mean, if we've got a group of just a couple who are specifically together on their own tour, then they can steer the thing however they like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I quite often will get home brewers that'll just book my time and then we'll spend the whole time talking about his home brew process.
Okay.
How to get a better utilization,
yeah.
or how to get rid of dissolved oxygen or whatever it might be that he's trying to, or she is trying to work their way through.
Okay.
So that's, yeah, it's obviously pretty flexible, but the whole thing usually takes about an hour, hour and a half.
Okay.
And it just goes through everything to do with us. And so hopefully they come out liking us more rather than less.
I love to have a beer with Duncan. I love to have a beer with Duncan. We drink in moderation, and we never, ever, ever get rolling drunk. We drink at the town and country, where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Duncan, 'cause Duncan's me mate. Yeah, I love to have a beer with Colin. I love to have a beer with Colin. We drink in moderation, and it doesn't really matter if he brings his doll. We drink at the town and country, where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Colin, 'cause Colin's me mate. I love to have a beer with Kevin. Oh, I love to have a beer with Kev. We drink in moderation, and he drives me home in his big old ship. We drink at the town and country, where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Kevin, 'cause Kevin's me mate. I love to have a beer with Patrick. I love to have a beer with Pat. We drink in moderation, and it wouldn't really matter if the beer was flat. We drink at the town and country, where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Patrick, 'cause Patrick's me mate. Change key. I love to have a beer with Robert. I love to have a beer with Bob. We drink in moderation,
just one more and back on the job. We drink at the town and country where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Robert, 'cause Robert's me mate. I love to have a beer with Duncan. Oh, I love to have a beer with Duncan. We drink in moderation and we never, ever, ever get rolling drunk. We drink at the town and country where the atmosphere is great. I love to have a beer with Duncan, 'cause Duncan's me mate. I love to have a beer with Duncan, 'cause Duncan's me mate.
One more.
Oh, that was an appropriate song, Phil. I want to have a beer with Duncan, and yes, that was a great chat you had with Tim at the brewery.
He's such a nice fella, isn't he?
Yes, really. He was.
What a great guy.
It's Phil C. in Deniliquin, or Denny to the locals. I want to talk to Steve, and Steve owns
Caratel and Caravan Park.
Now, Steve's going to tell us a few things about the park. Before we do that, I just wanted to let all my listeners know that I found out about this one on Wikicamps, and it was all positive reviews, Steve.
Yeah, well, a lot of the people sort of return customers type thing, and, you know, they enjoy the tranquility and the closeness, I suppose, to town, the RSL, that type of thing, golf course over the back, and, yeah, just look after the customers, and they love the place, so it's very positive.
Well, I've got to tell you, I love the place, and as I said, I found out about it through Wikicamps, but I guess what impressed me was your rates. Now, you're very, very affordable. Tell us about your rates, first of all, on your powered sites, and one of the big benefits of some of your powered sites.
Yeah, well, they're budget rates for the retirees, pensioners, grey nomads. We get a lot of essential workers through, a lot of old clients that have been coming back for years and years, so we just... Yeah, it's a smallish business, and 16 cabins, 6 powered sites with your own en-suites.
Which is brilliant.
It's, yeah, that's right, very well priced, and the people just keep coming back, and yeah, so it's,
So just to let the listeners know, Steve, $25 for a powered site with its own en-suite.
And I've been told quite a few times by my customers I've got to put the price up, but yeah, they just keep coming back. And because of the COVID's hit over the last 12 months or so, it's been so hard for everyone.
Yes.
So I've just decided just to keep it as is, look after the people that are coming through.
Yep.
And it's been pretty good. Everyone likes a bit of a chat and talk about things that are happening and everything, so that's where I'm sort of sitting. So.
Well, I think you helped me immensely when I checked in, because I've got a big van. A lot of the listeners may not know. And the site was a little bit tight, but you came out, you said, follow me, which I did, and then left hand down, right hand down. We had it in 2 minutes, which is brilliant service. Yeah. A lot of people just point you in a direction, hand you a map, and then you struggle with it, you know?
Yeah. No, so, I try to help out as much as I can and stop the arguments.
Yep. Well, mate, and save a lot of marriages. Now, tell us about your cabins, because how many cabins have you got here?
We've got 16 cabins fully self-contained with their own en-suite.
Yep.
And, at the moment, 55 a single, 65 a double. And as I said, it's affordable budget prices for a lot of the essential workers have been coming through over the last 12, 18 months.
Yep.
And prior to that. But again, I've looked after all the essential workers because, you know, they've been here sort of doing a lot of work around Denny, because they've got Denny's got a grant and from the government and everything. And there's a lot of road works and stuff. And, yeah, they love it. There's a fair bit of cooking gear and... Yeah, just sort of, cross the road from the RSL, which is handy, and, so.
Now, what about if you don't want to cook? Now, a lot of blokes, a lot of workers, a lot of people on holidays, they don't really want to cook. I mean, you've got the RSL, is that right, just across the street?
Yeah, the RSL.
Yeah, and what else have you got in town?
Well, there's the Exchange a bit further down, and the Globe Hotel have got some beautiful meals, and a lot of very positive sort of feedback with the Globe, so... in walking distance of town, you've got IGA, you've got Coles.
Right,
So it's sort of everyone's, it's fairly central. That's a positive side of it too.
Well, I've been here a couple of days now, and I had a drive around on my first day arriving, and it's actually quite a big town. Yeah. Not only the Coles, I mean, you've got the Coles, which is important for your main things, but you've got a J-Car in town, you've got a McDonald's, you've got a Reject Shop, there's a lot of shops in there.
Yeah, it's been very tough over the last 12, 18 months, and some shops have sort of closed down for a while.
Right.
But I think with the grant, it's helped out a lot of the businesses. The council have been fantastic here.
Yep.
with support also the New South Wales Governor being great. They've been just monitoring and helping the small businesses, as far as I know, they have with me.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's just, it's been a tough time, but, you know, everything's starting to come back now, and it's really starting to take off, and the new businesses is coming through, as you said, and there's plenty to do in Denny.
Absolutely. So just a couple of things. What do you recommend for travellers to do in Denny? You got anything off the top of your head?
Well, you can crack a beer.
Yes.
And, just relax in the sunshine.
Yep.
You've got the golf course here just over the back.
Right.
Great course in Denny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your RSL, you've got the depot where the cars are.
Yes.
Through the Easter time, we're having a Falcon sort of function with all the XYs and all those older cars. So we've got about, virtually two-thirds of the park booked out. So that's a car show.
Yep.
There's just so many things that come and go.
Yes.
And the best way to find out about all the different things is Jane. She's been helping me from the information centre.
Yes.
Give them a call. They've got all the paperwork. They've got all the tracks.
Fantastic.
Where you can go walking, and the river's just out the back there, the Edwards River. Yep. Absolutely beautiful.
Yep.
The cod are biting at the moment.
I was going to say, they are. You want to throw a bit of cheese in there. Apparently that's the local bait, cheese and chicken.
Something.
Sounds like something you want to eat. But if you want to have a bit of fun, have a go at a cod, and they're biting.
No, they've actually just done up Stephen's Weir.
Right.
And the boys were here on and off for about 12 months, the essential workers and the sandblasters and scaffolders and all that sort of stuff. So that's a spectacle. I haven't actually been out there since they've done it, but that's a spectacle in itself, and there's a lot of fishing out there too.
Fantastic. Mate, thank you so much for your time.
That's okay.
Yeah, Steve, now tell us again, where are you from, Steve?
I am from Deniliquin, Caratal and Caravan Park.
There you go, listeners. Now, before we finish this one, I've got to play you a song, and it's got to be Aussie. Who's your favourite Aussie?
Keith Urban.
Right.
And never work on Sundays.
You never work on Sundays? Kick back in Denny with a couple of beers on Sunday?
Yeah, way to go.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Steve. All stick right. around, listeners. We'll be straight back with more Roman Oz after I never work on Sundays.
Cheers.
I never work on a Sunday. I've got a life of my own. And this here now is the one day I spend with my family at home. Saturday and right into the evening till there were no more city lights. Those broken lines were getting blurry through my windscreen. Well, I guess I drove all night. Then Sunday morning found me rolling into sunrise with my fuel gauge dead. I pulled in to fill up and found the place deserted and a little sign that read, I knew where. We'll be right back.
Somebody said, hey, the boss wants to see you in his office right away. He told me just how far behind the work was getting, and on the weekend could I stay? I started laughing and said, you must be kidding. I've just got one thing to say. You know what I said? I never work on a Sunday. I've got a life of my own. And this here now is the one day I spend with my family. And I never work on a Sunday. I've got a life of my own. And this here now is the one day I spend with my family at home. I'm quite entitled to one day to spend with my family at home.
Hello listeners, Phil C here from Roaming Oz, and I'm in the town of Hay at Sheer Outback with Tegan, and Tegan is going to explain to us what my listeners can expect to see and do here at Sheer Outback. How are you today, Tegan?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for taking some time out to chat with us today. Now tell us all about Sheer Outback.
Sheer Outback was opened in 2002. It's right. An interactive museum mm-hmm. that also has a dedicated Hall of Fame.
Right.
At the moment, we have 43 inductees, shearers who have come from all across the country, excelled in the workplace, and just have been recognised for their contribution to the shearing industry.
Fantastic stuff. Now, I understand you have shearing demonstrations, is that correct?
Yes, we have three a day, 10:30, 1 and 3, over at the Murray Downs Woolshed, which was relocated here from Swan Hill mm-hmm. in 2002.
Right.
We have a shearer, Jack, who hosts them. He's very good, very funny, and he will give you a lot of knowledge.
Okay, fantastic. And you also have some video displays.
Yep, so we've got, there is three video displays. We have one that is dedicated to life in the shearing shed.
Right.
Talks a lot about the cooking roles, what to expect, and then the second one goes through the shearers, the contractors' families. It's got a bit on like the scabs of the team that goes into like money and wages and everything like that. Very mm-hmm. interesting. Yes. And then there's even a little bit where we have an animated sheep that talks to you about what it's like being shorn.
Alrighty, well, we might have a look at that a little bit later on. I can't imagine what it would be like to be shorn. Now, how much time do you think a person would need? What's an average, like minimum?
We recommend spending about an hour. That's to go through, read the Hall of Fame, look through the inductees, read about their history, what they've done to make it to the Hall of Fame, and then to go through, we've got a lot of, like, I guess you'd call it, like, history tally books, old medals, everything like that on the walls of people who've donated. We get a lot of donated gifts, like, that we could put in the museum, watch the videos, and then head over to the shed and watch the demonstration. That's 20 minutes to half an hour in itself by the okay. time Jack shears the sheep.
Yep.
He'll then go through the wool, show you what different pieces come off a fleece and where it all goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then out the back, we also have a maze that you're more than welcome to walk through. That's a good place for the kids to go while you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can head into the cafe and grab yourself a hot coffee and some shearer smoko.
Fantastic. Now, what does it take to become a shearer to get into the Hall of Fame? Because I understand your pop's going into the Hall of Fame, is that correct?
He came in 2019.
Okay.
So my pop was a very well-known shearer. He'd done a lot of travelling. He went over to Japan and taught shearing over there. He had a world record of 403 sheep.
Right.
That was a very long time ago. Sheep these days, records are up in the 600, 700, 800, 900s.
Okay.
In a day. He wow. had his own style. He developed a lot of stuff. They then went on and developed their own clothing brand. They were Morrisons of Euroa. And, yeah, he got inducted in 2019, sadly passed away just before Christmas last year, so okay. it was very nice to honour him in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And it's good that I get to come here and look at it every day on the board.
And talk about him. So what's Pop's name?
Pop was Brian Morrison.
Brian Morrison.
From Euroa.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And you said they have some sort of a competition? They're inducted every 2 years?
Yeah, so there's an induction panel.
Right.
And each year people send in nominations of family, friends, people they've worked with that they think should be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And I think this year we had 33 and they narrowed it down to only 5.
Wow.
So it's quite a process, and you've got to have a lot of raw material that comes with it, photos, proof of their like history and stuff like that. Like you need a lot of knowledge behind it.
Right.
And the panel only selects 5.
Okay, okay. So is it a young person's game now, you think? Or is it with all the modern technology, I suppose, anybody could become, well, not anybody, but shearing's not as difficult physically as it used to be.
I'd say it's still as difficult physically.
Right.
It is a lot, like there is a lot of young people coming up in it, but you'll still go to the odd shed where you get an old bloke who's 70 and he's still doing 200 a day.
Okay, okay. All right, well, I'm a bit of an old bloke and I'm not even going to give it a try. Look, it's been fabulous speaking with you, Tegan. I know my listeners are going to love it. Tell us a little about your coffee shop and also your gift shop before we go.
So the gift shop stocks a range of, we go from novelty items all the way up to high-end handbags. Mm-hmm. We stock a lot of Australian-made products because consumers want that these days. Tea towels, books, like children's books, they're always popular, Australian-made. And then in the cafe, our lovely cooks, Mandy and Karen, they make a lot of homemade stuff, biscuits, scones, cakes, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful hot coffee.
Right. Pies and sausage rolls, are they made here on site?
No, I don't think those ones are.
Main meals obviously are, and the sandwiches and the toasties.
Yep, main meals, sandwiches. They do traditional shearer's grub, so your lamb's fry.
Wow.
Delicious.
Okay. Hot damper? Do they do damper?
No, I don't think they do damper. Okay, they do scones.
Right. Yep.
And, yeah.
Wonderful. Lovely stuff. Now, lastly, what about the cost? Now, you'd obviously have different prices for, if you've got a seniors or a pensioners.
Yep, so we have a concession seniors card. That's $15. An adult's 20. A child over the age of 12 is 10. Or we do a family, which is adults and children for $45.
For $45. And it's great value for money.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot about the industry.
You learn a lot about the industry. You learn about, well, basically everything. The goods, the bads, the struggles.
Yes.
A lot of people walk out of here realising that shearing isn't just a job. Like, it's a lifestyle as well. And it's a bloody hard job at the end of
the day. Absolutely,
yep. And it takes a whole team to make the day go smooth.
Fantastic. Well, this interview has gone exceptionally smooth, Tegan. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to play you a song now. What would you like to hear? You got a favourite Aussie band?
Cold Chisel.
K-San. Look, I should have guessed it just by looking at you, darling. Thank you so much for your time. Listeners, Tegan, here at Shear Outback here in Hay. Stick around for Cold Chisel, and straight after that, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
Let my heart do the sapphires round K-San. And I sold my soul in the cigarettes to the black market man. I've had the Vietnam cold turkey from the ocean to the silver city, and it's only I the vets could understand about the long forgotten dark side guarantees. How there were no V-Day heroes in 1973, and how we sat in a Sydney harbor, her son opened but I couldn't kiss her. Well, she was lying and I was home to Lucky Land. She was like so many more from that time on. The lives were all so empty until they found their chosen one. And the legs were often open, but their minds were always closed. And their hearts were held in fast suburban chains. I'm
Kaysan. What a great song, written by Donnie Walker, the pianist, of course, from Cold Chisel, released back in May of 1978. Now, the song deals with the concerns of an Australian veteran coming back and dealing with civilian life. What a fantastic track. Absolutely love the band Cold Chisel. Well, now, listeners, we're still at the Shearer Outback here in Hay, and we're going to be chatting now with their resident shearer, Jack, and he's going to tell us all about life as a shearer.
How are you going today, Jack?
Yeah, not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, mate, I'm having a good time, and I've got to tell you, I'm extremely impressed. I've just seen you shear a sheep. It took you about 3 minutes. You've been a shearer all your life, is that right?
Oh, just about all my life, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you're now doing it out here. You've retired from the full-time game of shearing.
Yeah, health problems pulled me back here. Otherwise, I probably would be still shearing.
Okay, fair enough. Now, shearing's not an easy game, is it?
No, it's not. It's a very hard game.
Very hard game. Yeah. A lot of people think, anybody can do it. But I just saw the way you threw that sheep around. I've got to tell you, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Did it take you long to learn to become a shearer?
Yeah, about 2 or 3 years to learn properly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you learned just as you stood in the shearing shed and watched the other fellas, or they take you on as a rookie? How did it work?
I was a rouseabout for a couple of years, and I learned that way.
Okay. So what's a rouseabout do for the listeners?
Well, it picks the fleece up and skirt the fleece, mm-hmm. and sweep the board. And do whatever else is done by the classer. The classer's his boss.
Okay.
So he runs, the classer runs in.
So the classer, what does he do? Does he sort of
he
grade
skirts
the wool?
He skirts the wool and makes sure everything's going right with the wool and everything.
Okay. Yeah. So it took you about 3 years to learn to shear.
Yeah.
And it's a hard game.
No, it is a hard game.
It's physically demanding. You were saying to me before that, you know, the shearers usually gets up to around 50 degrees. Because of the temperature of the shed,
yep.
Plus the heat of the animal that's coming off onto you.
Yep.
So, pretty hard game. And what's an average day for an average shearer? How many sheep would he shear?
Oh, around about 150, 160 a day.
150 to 160 a day. Average. Now, what about your top gun shearers? What are they up to?
Well, they're 220, 250 a day.
Crikeys. Now, 250 a day, you've been over all day. It's a rugged, hard job. It's physically demanding. What sort of money would you get for what's a sheep worth to shear, first of all?
Well, $3.20. That's what they get for a sheep today.
$3.20, and that's before your tax?
Yeah, the tax has got to come out of that.
Tax has got to come out of that. And I understand, you were chatting to us before, and you said that you've also got to buy all your own equipment.
That is dead right. Roughly, you'll end up around about $2 a sheep after you take your holiday pay out.
Okay.
And if you end up with $2, and then you've got to buy all your shearing gear out of that.
Yeah, look, you were saying that to me, and you said like a set of blades and the head unit for the shearing is around about how much, did you say?
The handpiece alone is about $830.
Right.
Then the combs and cutters. Well, the cutters, say you buy 100 cutters.
Yep.
You're looking at, just say, $700.
$700.
That's about the cheapest ones you can get.
$700 for the cutters, $800 for the handpiece.
Yeah. Then you've got your combs.
And the combs?
Yeah, they're $40 each.
And how long would they last you for?
Well, around about 20 grinds on the grinder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of time, would you get a season out of those, or half a season, or 6 months, a year?
Oh, roughly about 2 months. All depends on the season too.
Okay.
Yeah, all depends how hard you've got to grind them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it all comes down to.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And you can bugger your combs up real quick if you don't know how to grind too.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, take the edge off them or...
No, grind to one side or the points or, uh-huh. or you've got to grind back. It's a lot of involved. You've got to go to the school more or less how to learn how to grind.
So did you do, when you were shearing, did you do all your own grinding?
Well, they had shearers schools then too, like they learn how to grind properly.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
All right.
That's how I learnt. I buggered a lot of tools before I come good.
So by the time you buy your tools, and you were saying before also that you got to pay for your own food.
That's right, when you're camped out.
You're camped out. Now, what about if you're in a contractor? Do they feed you and look after you in that sense?
They supply the cook and everything else like that. They look after you.
Yep.
And you just pay $40 or $35 a day.
Yep.
Camping out. Yeah.
Okay, I'll you're making $200 a day, and then you got your equipment, and then you got you pay your camp out fees.
Yeah.
It's not a real way of making heaps of money, is it? For a lot of hard work.
Or you leave leave home, then you might travel 800 kilometres to get to that shed. Yeah. And it might only go for a week and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like years ago where they used to go for 4 weeks where you could make some money out of the shed.
Yep.
But now they only go for about a week and a half, then you've got to head back home and head to another shed when you get back home.
Look, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, my friend, Jack. Absolute brilliant. Seeing you shear that sheep, mate, it's good to see that you're taking it easy now. You said your health's come in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But to come out here and shear a sheep for the tourists, you've still got the art.
Oh, thank you very
much. I've got to tell you, mate. You've still got the art. There's no way I could do it. It took you about 3 minutes. And you said the gum boys do it in about two. So you're still doing pretty good.
Oh, well, I only done one too.
Oh, yeah. You did. So you reckon by the end of the day, you'd be up to 6 minutes of sheep.
Oh, something like that it would be.
Fair enough, Jack. Mate, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. Now, I'm going to play you a song, mate. Who's your favourite Australian singer or band? Oh,
Slim Dusty, mate.
Got to be Slim. It has to be Slim. Yeah. And what about a favourite Slim song?
Oh,
biggest disappointment?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of it.
All right, listeners, we're going to get up the biggest disappointment by Slim Dusty, and you're not the biggest disappointment, Jack. Fantastic work, my friend, and keep it up for as long as you can.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, mate. Now, stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after this track.
They had my future wrapped up in a parcel, and no one even thought of asking me. The day I turned 15, I caught the mail train to find what else might be in life for me. I rode on trucks and trains and lived on nothing. Served me right for wanting to be free. Ah, well, that's the way society looked at it, but it didn't seem to be that way to me. And the biggest disappointment in the family was me, the only twisted branch upon our good old family tree. I just couldn't be the person they expected me to be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was me. A lot more dinner times than there were dinners. I learned a lot that hurt me at the time. Then this quiet country boy went home a different man, with a memory of distance on my mind. But I always spoke too loud and laughed too often, maybe drank too many glasses down, and perhaps my clothes were older than I realized. A relief to all concerned when I left town. And the biggest disappointment in the family was me, the only twisted branch upon our good old family tree. I just couldn't be the person they expected me to be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was me to be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was me.
My name is Phil C. And Lynn, you're going to have a chat with Esther. She's the managing director of the hotel, is that right?
Ah, yes, that's correct, Phil. How are you today, Esther?
G'day.
Thank you for joining us.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the hotel here in Broken Hill. I hear it's a bit of an iconic place.
It's a beautiful heritage hotel, so sort of three-storey sitting on the main street of Broken Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Originally built in 1889 as a coffee palace before it turned into a working hotel. It's had quite an interesting life. It's been a returned soldiers hotel for a long time, hostel,
okay.
And then back sort of a hotel from the mid-50s until now.
Right.
We bought the building about 11 years ago now.
Yep.
It's been a slow process of reopening.
Yes.
Happy to say the entire building's in full operation. So
wonderful.
There's sort of 40 rooms of accommodation upstairs. We're about to embark on a new renovation project to sort of include more ensuite rooms in our offering.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's penned in for 2021. And
wow, so a lot's happening here.
Of course.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. And the murals, the beautiful murals that are in the foyer area and up the staircase.
Yep.
They've been around for quite a while as well, I believe.
They have. So from the mid-1980s they were begun.
Mm-hmm.
So first ones were done by Mario Cialotto, who was an Italian fellow who used to own the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the other paintings were done by an Indigenous artist by the name of Gordon Way.
Oh, right.
So over 500 square metres of mural paintings all throughout the building, through most of the public areas.
Yes.
And then, of course, as well in there's one accommodation which has got the original paintings in
which
is the Priscilla suite.
Yes.
Yeah.
It actually featured in the Priscilla movie.
It did,
yes. Oh, lovely. And also too, I believe all the murals have actually a water theme to them.
They do. So Mario had this idea that he wanted the building to feel like an oasis in the desert.
Mm.
So
lovely.
Gordon to include water in them. So Gordon was a landscape painter, like would paint straight out of his head sort of an onto the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so his scenes are very sort of reminiscent from around this area or the Flinders Ranges where he was from.
Yep.
But then they've sort of got these raging steam streams or sort of lakes through them.
Yep. Oh, lovely.
Mm.
And also too, you have a thing called the Broken Hill Festival.
We sure do. So sort of coming on to our seventh year now. I can't remember if I've skipped a year now with COVID.
Yes.
But it is our annual festival which happens in September.
Yeah.
Which is sort of marks the annual cinematic release of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the movie.
Right.
So this is, I guess, our homage party to our link with that movie. So the hotel was used as a central set for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And over 70% of the movie was shot sort of in and around
Broken Hill. Right.
So the hotel sort of features as itself in the movie, and then also as sort of other interior locations. So Stephen Elliott, who was the writer and director of the film, gifted us in the city the $1 million stage show bus and the big stiletto you see in the foyer.
So that's from the movie.
That one's from the first Australian musical.
Oh, right,
which he went on to do.
Yes.
And so we bring that out sort of every year during the event.
So it gets a bit of a dust up and a polish.
It does, yeah, a bit more glitter added on.
Yes.
And
Yeah, I noticed that. So what do people expect to see when they come to this festival? Because it's something that I haven't been to, and I think we are coming. So
we are coming. I'm
so
not missing the festival this year.
What are we going to be seeing?
So it's expanded to sort of go over a five-day period.
Oh, really?
Now. So sort of starts on the events sort of kick off on the Thursday through until the Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We have a dedicated train called the Sewer City Stiletto, which comes out of Sydney to people out.
Oh, right.
So sort of adjacent to the hotel here, we close the street off. We built a massive big stage out there, plus the bus, bars, food vans, that sort of thing. There are ticketed shows Friday, Saturday and Sunday night, which are available through the website.
Yep.
And then we also have some free community shows that happen, like the Main Street Parade on the Saturday mornings.
Oh, right, I was going to ask if there was a parade.
Yeah, so that's our free event which happens. So it's basically sort of in the theme of the movie.
Yes.
You know, dare your mates to dress up in their most outrageous Priscilla-inspired outfit.
Oh, okay.
And, so does that mean I have to wear glitter and gloss?
Absolutely. So it's the perfect weekend to dust out your most fabulous outfit and Right, okay.
Strut your stuff for the entire weekend. Yeah. So, you know, multiple outfits every day.
So, pair of heels and, yeah.
I'll be in it.
Oh, whatever you like. We get thousands that come along the main street there. We do have, you do need to apply now to be in actual parade.
Right. Okay.
Or otherwise, you know, people that come to watch the parade are still dressed up. We have free shows in the town square there.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
So what sort of crowd do you get? Do you get a huge crowd?
We do. Look, 2020, obviously, we weren't able to have the event. We did something very small just to mark the dates. Yep. But so 2,500 was our sort of maximum ticket sales for the nightly shows, each night.
Yep.
So, but at the parade, we see around 5,000, 6,000 people. And, of course, upping those ticket numbers as well as our capacity restrictions ease.
Yes.
So can I ask, with the festival, and you said get dressed up in your best glitter and gloss, do you get parents with children in the festival, or is it all just guys in the festival dressing up as girls?
No, our biggest audience, it's evening out a bit, but our biggest audience are women 50+.
Okay.
So they get a whole gaggle of girlfriends for the weekend and come out and, you know, laugh and dance to ABBA and, have a great old time. So I think one of the feedback we get every year from our event is they can't believe what a mixed audience it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sort of from... The ticketed shows are 18+.
Yes.
Because they're in the licensed hotel. Yes. Yep. But then otherwise, you know, we do drag story hour at the library. The parade is all ages sort of thing. So it's really amazing. I think that appeal for, you know, it's a really about sort of colour and vibrance, expressing who you are and acceptance, that sort of thing. You know, it's a really big part of the message that the festival conveys, I guess. And certainly, you know, the colourful community, the LGBTIQA+ community that celebrate that sort of event.
Yes.
You've got that down pat.
Yeah, there's a few letters in there. But,
yes, I know. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And I noticed, and I don't know whether it does happen or whether it's an old sign out the front, you had two up in the window. Is that...
We do. We've actually just restarted the games post-COVID, actually, which is quite exciting. Okay. So back in the late 1980s, the city was granted a special cultural license to be able to play tour to the city council. So we hold that license on behalf of the council. So it can only be in one venue in the city. So we've had it now probably about 6 or 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So we can play the game sort of any time of day. We just run a regular game generally on a Friday night.
Yeah,
so it's, you know, just it's quite lively last weekend with St. Paddy's races on. Yeah, so I guess a lot of punters in town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like it's a traditional two-up game, sort of different to the way they run it in the casinos, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And you do karaoke, do you? Do you still do the karaoke?
We do. Once a week, there's always a big lineup to get into karaoke. We've got our regulars and anyone who feels like they want to strut their stuff for the weekend.
And is that sort of run by drag queens as well, or no?
Once a month, we get our host, the gorgeous Amanda Screetley.
Okay.
Will come up and host the karaoke for us.
Fantastic.
We do a bit of drag bingo once a month and do some drag and dine shows. So just depending on the season, we always try to have
a... Fantastic.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot to do here at the Palace Hotel.
Absolutely.
Have you got anything else you want to ask, Phil?
No, not really.
All right, so if that's the case, you don't have anything else, Phil. Esther, have you got a favourite Aussie band song that you'd like us to play at the end of the show?
Oh, sure. I think I've sort of struggled to come up with a Priscilla-themed song from an Australian artist, but... we had a great artist and a good friend of mine that came out and performed at one of the earlier Broken Hill festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Moju is their name. They've sort of and one of their new release songs, Native Tongue, I believe it sort of won some awards in the Australian Indigenous Music Awards and the Australian Music Awards. So I'd love to hear that song.
All right. Okay. Do you think you'll have that song, Phil?
Oh, we'll get that song for Esther. That's my game. Aussie music. Phil C's my name and Aussie music is my game.
All right. Well, thank you, Esther, so much. It's been a great to be in this iconic hotel and to hear all about it and also to hear about the What is it?
Priscilla.
Priscilla.
Broken Heel
Broken
Festival.
Broken Heel, thank
yeah.
you.
That's it.
No problem. We'll see you out here in September.
We will be here, Esther, with my best glisten gloss and, Linny, your high heels and your evening.
Ah, yes, I better go searching.
You better go searching. All righty. Thank you so much, Esther.
Cheers.
All right, listeners, stick around for that great track that's coming up now, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after that.
You enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.